My goodness, how time changes. Since the last time we talked, we're going to have full fans for some fun games.
And that's what I want to talk about. I want to talk about the fact we're going to do this and the impact. So let me start with this. How much ground needs to be made up, and how long could it take to make up that ground?
It depends on who the provider is. If you are a sponsor provider, if you are a live events provider, a lot of those companies didn't have a whole lot of output over the pandemic. So they didn't, you know, they basically just furloughed their entire staff and they didn't run their music festivals or whatever else. If you're talking about, you know, businesses that are, you know, more well-known, you know, Live Nations, the Ticketmasters, the Learfield IMGs, the players like that, I mean, you know, these are businesses that were profitable prior to the pandemic. Coming back online, they're not really going to start making real money probably until mid to late 2022. And that's what's going to bring them back to where they were, which is why you're seeing such a large rush to come back. I mean, the event calendar is almost doubled up, because what a lot of people don't realize is a lot of the events that didn't happen weren't actually canceled. Most people held on to their tickets. And so all of those have to be fulfilled first before they can start making money on new events.
Makes a big difference. Now, the sports part of it. All right. Let's talk about the ticket boom. Are you sensing any hesitancy of fans of wanting to get back, or are you sensing that they're over the next couple of months that people are anxious to get back?
You know, it's funny. It's I'll say something that maybe somebody who talks a lot about our industry shouldn't say. I think this boom, there is a massive boom, and it's going to continue for another year. And that boom is driven by the highest savings rates we've ever seen. So people weren't out spending their money. They weren't out vacationing. They weren't out doing those things. And so now you have this, you know, unreasonable expectation of, I've got all this money, I need to go spend it.
I think this boom
is going to hold. Yeah. Spend your stimmy check, right? And I think that you're going to see, you know, pretty significant spending into live events for the next 9 to 12 months. And then I think it's going to slow down a little bit. I don't think it's going to go into like a recession area for live events, but I do think we're going to get back to a form of reality. But I do expect high prices, high demand, high everything through the next year's college football season, the NFL season, and all of the, you know, the diamond events, the Super Bowls, Masters, Final Fours. I think those are going to just have a big year between September and April, barring a fourth wave of some kind.
All right, so now let's go to the next part. All right, the NHL is now expanded, so Seattle comes in, which means they've received about $1.15 billion in expansion fees from both Vegas and Seattle combined.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see the NBA and Major League Baseball going the expansion route because of quick cash capability?
The problem, yes, but not the same between the two of them. The labor issues with baseball are so bad, I think they're going to have a hard time pushing through bulk expansion, especially considering what they just did with minor league baseball and, you know, cutting a number of teams and cutting some spending there. I think there is a big labor talk that's going to happen with baseball prior to an expansion, and I think you could see Oakland relocate, right? Oakland could end up in Vegas. I think basketball has been laying the groundwork for that for quite a while. I think what the NBA has done so well is they're starting to mimic the success that the Premier League's had in having the G League and in having, you know, these cities that they can almost test for a little while before they turn them into, you know, premium cities that host an NBA team. But I think the NBA's labor situation, because they have revenue sharing, is so much easier for them, and their labor piece is a little bit better right now. I think they have a lot better prospects for moving into expansion than baseball does. But look, you cite the money that the Seattle Kraken got, and you cite the money that the Las Vegas Golden Knights got, but, I mean, the DC United was just valued at $700 million. So there's definitely an expansion fee boom out there. The question is just how many billionaires are there that can buy the team in today's environment, because now it's not just a question of is there a billionaire who can do it, it's is there a billionaire who's not going to upset the populace, the players, and the labor force.
And that's, and again, you look at the group that was put together by Alex Rodriguez to buy the Minnesota Timberwolves. They're
right.
not talking about keeping them in Minneapolis. They're talking about sending them to Seattle, which is a has been a prime bargaining chip in the NBA to get better arenas, that if you don't go, you can go to Seattle, just like the NFL used Los Angeles. Is that correct?
Yeah, and look, that argument, that bargaining chip has only gotten stronger with the wild success of the Kraken. The Seattle Kraken yeah. sold out quickly and easily. More importantly, the corporate sponsorships they had there sold out quickly and at high levels. They are doing a very good job of kind of mimicking what happened in Las Vegas. We'll see what they do with the expansion draft. I think they made the Golden Knights a little too good, too fast. They might pull back on that gas pedal a little bit.
Yes.
But I think that that's what's going to happen. I think, you know, there's so much success in Las Vegas and Seattle that even if you move the Minnesota Timberwolves to Seattle, you now have Las Vegas as your bargaining chip, which the A's are already using. Vegas has a NBA-ready arena. They have everything that you need as far as facilities, and now you've already had the NHL and the NFL go into the city, which eliminates the stigma of sports betting around it. So, yes, they've been using the Seattle chip for quite a long time. I think they might actually cash that chip now because they have Vegas in their back pocket. And Nashville is growing as a city that people are considering for, you know, those live events because the Predators have been so strong and the Titans have done pretty well.
Yeah, no question. All right, so now let's continue on the cash mode. Yahoo Sports and Pete Thamel reporting today something you and I have talked about, and as you know, I brought up the idea of 12 in the college football playoff back in December. Athletic departments, for the most part, were running eight-figure losses for the past fiscal year.
Yeah.
What there aren't many avenues to make it up. Is the college football playoff, once this contract is up, a way to start making that up?
Yes, and there are some ways for them to make it up. Sports betting, cannabis, those sorts of things that are going to be the slowest into college sports for every reason that we could all imagine. There are different venues or different avenues for them. NFT, crypto, there's new sponsorship channels that are opening up that are going to make them some money. But in the end, you know, you want to take the money. And just to make this as simple as possible, because I'm sure we'll talk about the Olympics in a second too, which is exactly what's happening there. All that's really happening is these schools are saying, why are we enriching the bowl games, right? We're disrupting. We're making it so that the bowls are no longer standalone. They're starting to be consolidated into a college football playoff. And then we have a little bit more democratic way of spreading money around so that this isn't, you know, a handful of schools. You can actually involve more schools, and therefore the rising tide raises all boats. Because if you have more teams in contention, you have more teams that can make money throughout the year. Because I think what the common fan doesn't pay attention to is they think, I don't need to see Central Florida in the playoff. I don't want to watch them play Alabama. But you probably do want to watch them play more than you would if they're going to the playoff in their games in November and December.
Exactly.
And that's what college football is looking at.
See, we think the same way. I bet that's exactly what you and I were talking about. All right,
yeah.
So now let's get to
looking,
the...
They're not looking at this and saying, we think the first round of the college football playoff is going to be super exciting. I hope it is, and maybe it is, right? I mean, none of us thought that Ohio State was going to win the title in the first year of the college football playoff when they had their third-string quarterback show up, and they did, right? And that team wouldn't have played in the old BCS formula.
No,
but
exactly right.
This comes down to how much more money can I drive out of regular season games? And this enables you to drive more money. It's the same exact thing that the NBA did with the play-in tournament.
Now, we get to the Olympics. Is this a come hell or high water deal for them? Because NBC sounds to me like they've told everybody they're going. It's go time.
They're going. It's happening. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's happening because the IOC holds all the cards. Nobody can stop them. All of these contracts are guaranteed. They're going to get their money one way or the other. And, you know, if we've learned anything from watching the IOC or FIFA or any of those international organizations over the last few decades, they care about money and nothing else. And that's what's going to happen. They're going to say, look, you need to fill our coffers. Our contracts say that this is going to happen, so it's going to happen. And they are in a dicey situation. And look, they did it to themselves when you piggyback Beijing on Tokyo, because now you have a threat in Beijing of sponsors saying maybe we can't be as active. I mean, there's not going to be any boycotts, but there's probably going to be some kind of activism while you're there. So if you're the Olympics, you're really not looking at another big payday until Paris. I mean, Milan is a great city, but summer games are triple what the winter games are as far as economic impact goes. And so I think it happens either way. And I think it just happens because the IOC says it happens. That's it, right? I mean, look, we want our money. We're gonna run the games.
Does this open the door to Tokyo getting 2032 as a makeup?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, what was interesting that happened in our space over the last couple of weeks was, and we've known about it for months, that Endeavor won the bid for the hospitality contract for Milan, Paris, and Los Angeles. They bid $1.6 billion on that. And the next bid was $1.3 billion, and that was NBC. So for those who think that the Olympics is slowing down, it isn't. There's more money coming out of it, and they're disrupting what's happening with all of the different providers that are out there. If you're going to have that big a bid, and you're going to show enough value into that bid as we start going into the games, right, because their first games is going to be Milan. Paris. They're going to start to want to show that there's success here, and then you want to dangle that next carrot of the next package of games. And Tokyo is a sure thing. I mean, the one thing Tokyo really had going for it prior to COVID hitting was we were seeing just bonkers numbers as far as on sales for pricing, for demand, for hotels, for all of it. I mean, Tokyo was going to set every record under the sun. So they'd be crazy not to go back there in 2032 and try to get what they were hoping to get in 2020.
Yeah, because that's what I've thought. It was a makeup opportunity, because essentially that's about what they did with Paris and L.A. They said, look, they both bid for in 24, so they just split them, gave one 24, the other 28.
Yeah, they're 28. And look, it's not there's no precedence for this. I mean, I know it's summer versus winter, but Beijing was 2008, and now it's 2022. That's a 14-year split, right? This is a 12-year split. It's not unheard of.
No, it's not unheard of. Exactly right. The fans will probably not be able to go. So what does that do? Now, look, the driver's TV, and NBC is the biggest driver of all. But does that do anything to the games in terms financially? What kind of blow is it that they're, you know, we all know in Major League Baseball, you need 40% of the gate. The NBA is about 35%. Yeah. What do the Olympics need normally?
Well, the vast majority of the Olympics revenue comes from rights and sponsorships, so they'll do just fine. But yes, the ticket sales generally drives the local governing bodies a little bit better. So, you know, when you are the way the Olympics works, I'm not going to go into too much detail on it, but the way the Olympics works is a lot of the ticketing is actually given out to each one of the countries, and the countries have their own organizations that they sell tickets through. And for total disclosure, we help sell tickets for, I think it's like 40 countries now. So it's going to hurt the country's governing bodies, the USOC, the USOPC, you know, Australia's governing body, more than it's going to hurt the actual event itself. Like, they do have the economic impact of it that you can imagine, but it also hurts all the local countries when you don't have the ability to sell the tickets into the customers. And so I think there's still going to be sponsorship for it. I think, unfortunately for all of us, as if we haven't had enough politics over the past couple of years, I think the Tokyo games and the Beijing games are going to be the most political games we've seen in 30 years.
I agree with you about that.
The Tokyo ruling party, I mean, look, the general public does not want to host the games. They've been very vocal about it. I mean, every survey out there, 65 to 70% say this shouldn't happen, and they're going to lose more money on it. And then in Beijing, you know, there's a belief that, you know, many of those who are in power now, you know, one of the crowns in their throne is that they were so successful with the Beijing Games of 2008, and this is an opportunity for, you know, the challenging party to pull that throne or to pull that crown out as well by making 2022 a dud. So just get ready for a lot of very politically skewed stories around these two games.
Yeah, no question. In fact, Beijing, there's been talk of boycotts. And look, I know two athletes personally that were in the 80 boycott. You know athletes, all right, as well.
They're the only ones who got hurt.
Exactly right. They're the only ones that got hurt were the participants.
Yeah. I don't think we'll see boycotts, but I think we'll see activism of some kind. And it's going to be very interesting to see how that plays out because they don't have patience for that in China. I was there for the Beijing Games in 08 for a month. I've seen how they do things from, you know, behind the curtain. And it's they don't have the same rules and the same belief in rights as we do.
I never would have known that.
I saw some things happen there that I just, you know, they're stories that we tell over drinks about suitcases full of money and automatic weapons, and it was just crazy. It was everything that you thought it would be in a corrupt international event was right in front of me.
Of the sports in this country, which do you think will come out of the pandemic in pretty good shape? And I'll throw one out there. Now, we know the NFL will. So besides that.
Yeah, I was going to say, the NFL is the easy one.
Yeah, that's the easy one. My guess is, I think MLS comes out of this in pretty good shape.
Yeah. Well, what helps the MLS the most is the labor piece that they came to last summer. You know, what a lot of fans don't understand is a lot of these economics are really impacted by employee costs. Employee costs is, you know, the stars and the athletes. The NBA is driven by a lot more ticketing revenue than most people understand. So when you don't have fans for that long, the revenue that's being shared is difficult. And now you're going to have another conversation about what kind of revenue share there is. And the next time you do a collective bargaining agreement, there's going to be you're going to have a very long argument over force majeure, right? What is force majeure? What happens if the pandemic shuts it down? Because now we have precedence for this, that it's happened. And that puts them in a precarious position because that happens with their sponsors too. What MLS did, which is very well, I mean, first of all, MLS is an outdoor sport, which is very helpful. Not as a contact sport like the NFL. It's growing significantly. And most importantly, they have labor peace right now. And, you know, their feeder systems are very strong. They made a move the other day that most people wouldn't have noticed that might have slipped underneath the radar, where they're starting to create a minor leagues that playing into the MLS. So they're starting to create this system. The only question with the MLS is going to be how them being separated from the men's national team and women's national team's media rights is going to impact them, because there was some belief that because those deals were packaged, MLS was getting more money. I don't, you know, since we just saw, you know, the DC United valued at $725 million, I don't think that's a concern. But who knows, right? But I do think the MLS is in a really strong position. So is the NHL. I mean, look, for all the mistakes the NHL has made over the last 20-something years,
not the last
really
18
nailed,
months.
They
yeah,
really
not
nailed
the last
expansion.
18 months.
Yeah, I mean, the Kraken and Golden Knights were wild successes. And the product in the ice has been good. They have young stars. They have labor peace. Look, I mean, I was a casualty of the lockout of 2004. I was working for the LA Kings at that point. Yep. And then they had another one. But look, when you come out of those wars and you have labor peace and you have a framework for that labor peace, and now the pandemic happens to come out of it, again, the one thing that costs you the most money, that's the most variable, which is, or the most delicate, which is labor, you have solved where the other leagues don't. That's a good spot to be in.
Right. Gary Bettman, to his credit, Tony, said, "We're not going to go back until you, the players, tell me you're ready. If you say we're ready on July 20th, we'll go July 20th. If you think you can't be ready till August 10th, we'll go August 10th. It was like one of those, like, wow, this guy learned. And then they struck a four-year extension of their deal with the players to go with new TV deals with ESPN, Turner.
Yeah, they're back on the big names again, right?
Yeah. So now, one final question, right? Now let's go to something that's near and dear to both of our hearts. How well does college sports, football, men's basketball, come out of this? And how much time does it take to really come out of it in such a way where all sports are helped?
I think I think the money, college sports, and that doesn't necessarily mean basketball or football because it depends on what school you're at, right? I mean, college basketball at some schools drives an inordinate amount of revenue, whereas at like a USC or a Penn State, it's an also-ran to the football team. You know, those football teams are running $800 million budgets. College football had its own problems going into the pandemic, and I think the pandemic weakens it significantly. I think, you know, the passing of the NIL and the further empowerment of college athletes, which I'm totally aligned with, and I know you are too, yes, is going to create a circumstance where, you know, there's an interesting book a couple of years ago written by Kevin Kelly that talks about that most wealth isn't created, it's just moved. Like, when you talk about something that disrupts an industry, all you're doing is moving money from one side to the other. And yep, and that's what's going to happen, is there's this pressure on the college institutions as the money is starting to be moved from them into the athletes' coffers and into those that are around the athletes. And a lot of that money that's, you know, the dark money that, you know, the $180,000 that goes to Cam Newton, that stuff comes to light and you start to get value. So I think right now we're in a place where you're trying to create a consolidation of, you know, universities with the college football playoff at the same time that you're creating super leagues that are even less tied together than they've ever been, right? The Big Ten is so healthy. The SEC is so healthy. The Pac-12 is teetering. The ACC is on its back. The Big East collapsed. Like, you know, we're really moving towards, and, you know, I apologize to the listeners that I often point towards European soccer, but European soccer has just been around longer as a commercial concern. So a lot of the things that they've experienced, we just are kind of moving our way towards. I worry that college football is moving in the direction of like Italian soccer or Spanish soccer, as opposed to European, as opposed to English soccer, where the lower tier teams are just, they cannot compete, right? They don't have the firepower. They don't have the facilities. I think Penn State will be fine. I think USC will be fine. I think the big schools will be fine. I think you're going to have a real problem with the tier two college football programs, because if they can't get through the next 2 years, and they might not be able to make it, you know, if they're not getting those TV contracts, if they don't have an opportunity to, you know, be anything but, you know, served up 3 days a week, 3 days a year, it's going to create an environment that might not be all that compelling to watch.
My friend, I thoroughly enjoy it. Need to do this more often, okay?
Yeah, for sure. We're coming up on whiskey already. You guys got a great opener.
I know. You texted me about that, and that, I can't wait. Are you going to go?
I might. Dave's trying to get me to go, so we'll see.
I'm loving it. All right. We'll talk again.
We'll talk soon.